Welcome to Tom Papa's Come to Papa.
Thank you all for listening. Thank you all for giving nice reviews on iTunes. Thank you for helping spread the word of what is probably the most inspirational, joy-filled moments of all of our lives. Is that too much?
A little bit. But that's all right. We still have hope. It's early in the week.
I'm here with the great Paul Morrissey. We are heading out on tour. Make sure you go to tompapa.com because we have a lot of dates coming up. We are going to Indiana. We're going to Viejo, California, Whitehall, Washington, Federal Way, Washington. What's Whitehall?
Oh,
that's a private event.
So you can't
or
come.
Orlando, Boston, Vancouver,
Chicago,
Denver, Springfield, Halifax, Irvine. It just doesn't stop. It doesn't stop. I was talking with my agent the other day. I think I'm booked through December.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah. I'm like, didn't we just leave December? Why am I having to think, like, where am I going to spend the holidays? But there's a lot of tour dates and a lot of stuff going on. So go to tompapa.com and check out the dates and make sure you come out and see us live. My part of that tour will be promoting Your Dad Stole My Rake and Other Family Dilemmas, my new book, my first book.
Yeah, so when does it come out?
It's available now on Amazon and wherever you buy books online. You can pre-order it right now. And then it comes out June 5th.
That's June,
right before Father's Day. You know, it's a funny book about family, everybody in your family. And I think it's funny. People seem to enjoy it so far. It's a very interesting thing when you write a book and write a book and write a book and write a book. And then you're going to put it out. And then you want people, of course, to get the book. And then you want to be on the bestseller list. And I think it's about 3,000 copies that you need to sell.
Yeah.
Right off the bat, so you can get into the bestseller list. It's a weird number to me. I'm not sure if that's... It seems like that wouldn't be too much, but in a lot of ways, it's an enormous amount.
It is an enormous amount, but the way that... at least comedians, I think... Because, you know, David Sedaris, the way that he does it is he does all these live shows, and he goes to these nice theaters, and he sells the book at the theater.
Right.
So if half the people buy it, then you've sold 1,000 books.
But you know from being on tour, selling your CD or whatever it is, half the people is very unlikely that half the people will be buying it.
But here's the thing. He does he signs the books or whatever else you have afterwards. I don't know if he still signs everything else, but he's one of those guys. He's got OCD so bad that he won't leave until he sees everybody. So, I mean, he's typically there 2 to 3 hours after the show.
Oh, my God.
Is that
crazy? Kind of makes sense because, you know, a lot of times we'll do shows and you're tired after the show and you want to go get something to eat or whatever. But, you know, so what? So you sit at it's kind of like when we go to the shows early. It's like it used to be that we would get there like right before the show and go on stage.
Right.
Then it's like, well, I'm either sitting in the hotel room here at this Days Inn, or I could be sitting backstage with some celery sticks at the theater.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it doesn't make, you know what I mean? We have all this anticipation of when we should and get out of there. But it's like, and that is a show business thing that's as old as the hills.
Mm-hmm.
I remember playing with some, I did a music thing for Kids Who Rock or something like that. And all there were like old blues guys and stuff there. Every artist, there were some like cool, like Paul Schaefer was there and Frankie Robinson. And all. Every single artist that was on the bill was like, got there and wanted to get out of there as quickly as possible. And part of it is because it's fear, you know, because you have the show, you have an enormous amount of pressure. You have all these people in the audience that are waiting for you to do your thing. That's pressure. Even if you're Frankie Robinson and, am I saying that right? Is it Frankie?
Smokey
Robinson. I'm sorry. Smokey Robinson. And, you've done it a zillion times. You still have the pressure to perform. And when you leave the building, you know that it's over.
Right.
You know what I mean? But as we're going around touring and doing the books and everything, we'll be spending more time out front, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's very good. Like, I do notice when we haven't done it, like, it's one of those things, like, it does take a lot of time and it feels like extra exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
Not to complain about it, but it's like you do definitely feel like, oh, we did a couple shows tonight. And it's like, oh, no, we didn't. We were just talking to people for like an hour afterwards, which is still fun. But mm-hmm. But you do miss out on stuff. I definitely remember going to Livermore.
Yeah.
And we talked to people afterwards and you did an encore. And, you know, I remember when we spend that extra time with people, it kind of, you know, they tell you about the stuff in town and, oh,
no,
hey.
Good. I know. And it's like, what else? Why else are you in Livermore? What are you going to do?
You're right.
Go back and just watch, you know, HBO. It's like, I know. We should be more that way, I guess. But it is, you know, it also depends on the travel. It depends on all that other stuff. Of like,
the travel is definitely the thing of us knowing we have to get up at 4 in the morning gets us out of there. And also our constant struggle to find something to eat past 10 p.m. or thereabouts in any town. How come any town doesn't have things open? Even restaurants that are open till 10 don't serve until 10. We figured out.
Because the only people they have to feed are performers. Everybody else is home in bed, I guess.
And then whenever we go to a restaurant, we see people from the show. So it's always fun, especially with the book. It's going to be... I think that's what you have differently than most people that are writing a book, is that you have this interaction with people and they don't. You know what I mean? Like,
yes, no, I know. That's why all the publicity and stuff is like, so Tom, can you bring books to your shows?
Yeah.
I always thought, well, it's going to be, there's some secret to what the book people do.
Well, I mean, one of the things with David Sedaris is just the fact that anybody wants to buy the book is like a joy to him, you know what I mean?
Right.
So if like 1,000 people want to buy it, I'll be your best friend, you know? Like, it's yeah. like a thing where, yeah, whatever you, if I just have to talk to you guys afterwards, that's great.
Right.
Like, he'll even eat dinner while he's signing books. It's pretty funny.
Are you poor now because the stock market crashed?
Luckily, I took my money out that never existed in the stock market. So I'm okay.
I say it all the time, and you know, everybody who's watching the market go up and it's going crazy and the market's going up and up and up, and I just sit there and it's like, this is all fake money.
Yep.
You know, it's all fake because like all the other schlubs, we're just going to wait, and this is going to pop, and it's going to crash, and all this money you thought you had, you don't really have.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just part of the herd, and you just got to, you just go along. I guess that's just the way you do it. I'm at a loss.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things where if you made money on it, you would feel weird about it, right? Like if somebody just say, hey... Because you see, what's his name, 50 Cent?
Yeah.
I guess he sold a bunch of his albums for a Bitcoin price, which he didn't even remember.
Uh-huh.
And I guess he had 400 Bitcoin, which is now worth $7 million. So he had $7 million in an account that he didn't know about from this Bitcoin. Yeah, he just did a thing on his website that you could buy it for Bitcoin or money, or it was like a promotion. And, you know, he had like this certain amount of Bitcoin, and then Bitcoin went like through the roof.
Right.
And so now it's worth $7 million. So he just... So I'm sure he's like, I didn't earn this money. Like, this is stupid.
I'm sure he doesn't feel bad about it, though. I wouldn't feel bad if I had sold all my stuff on Friday and then the market tanked. And
right.
I'd feel pretty damn good about it.
Yeah, but be under investigation.
But this is, you go to all these people that are like really smart with this stuff and brokers and whatever, and you're like, you know, this isn't going to last. And they're like, well, what are we going to do? We'll sell it and then buy what? Buy other stuff that's going to crash?
Yeah.
Nobody knows jack except the people that have the tip top of it all and can move. You know, here's the scariest part that I learned last night. This is, you want to really feel like a schmuck. Half of the money in equities in the market are in funds that are run by computer programs. There's no humans involved.
Mm.
So when the markets start to act weird, the program kicks in all these funds, and it starts selling, and there's no human being involved. It's computers talking to computers, and then Joe Schmo there with his retirement fund is at the mercy of computers talking to computers and selling off in the market.
Yeah.
How insane is that?
Yeah, it's nuts, man.
Yeah. I mean, it's all so stupid. Well, so dumb. And I keep talking the whole time when the market's going up, and I don't have a ton of money in it, but I have enough that, you know, that's where I put the money. You talk to people, and nobody's like, yeah, this is what you should do. You should put it in bonds. You should put it in this. Or you put it in that. Everyone's like, no, it's just the way, you know, the market's doing really well. Nobody knows jack.
Yeah, nobody knows anything. And you can't even joke about it because, like, I've tried to do this because the whole stockbroker thing is based on these people have inside tips, and they'll help you out. But the law is, if they actually know anything, they're going to get arrested. So,
right. Yeah.
So nobody can actually know anything. And the whole thing is based on, well, maybe he does know. Or maybe he did talk to somebody, but you're not supposed to talk about it. Like,
it's so stupid.
It is.
It is. I mean, just like, and you can't help but feel like a rube.
I was going to say rented mule. The thing I would do as far as investing for you is to use the companies that you feel good about. You know what I mean? Like, I should buy a stock in Nike, or you should buy a stock in Tesla, or,
right.
You know what I mean?
And
like,
it's over the long haul and all that other stuff.
A company that you kind of believe in, you know? So,
I believe that, and I believe it's, you know, over the long haul, you just hang on to this stuff, whether it goes up and down, it will go up and down. That's all good and fine and good. But this new revelation that the computers are just having their own meeting, it's kind of scary.
I mean, the amount of tricks, like, I know somebody who, I think the story was, they would do the market in the U.S. would close, right? And then I think there's a certain amount, like maybe a few minutes in like China or Japan,
yeah,
that the market's open. So basically you can kind of mimic what happened here.
Uh-huh.
And they would just like transfer the money, like millions of dollars,
right,
to the stuff that did well in America, even for like that few minutes, and then take it out and made millions of dollars. And supposedly it was like some kind of illegal, but it's like, that's the way the system's, where you can buy stocks on your phone. You can, it's like a video game.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my God. I was playing golf with a friend of mine who was telling me a story about how his grandfather was super cheap his whole life. Like, mm-hmm. He was the cheapest guy you would have met. Totally frugal. And, but any, little money he had, he was just quietly investing it in these solid companies, you know, like Coke or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the time he died, when he was 80, he had amassed a good amount of money, just from quietly investing in, like you said, those big solid companies. And so much so that all of his kids were able to retire.
Oh, really? Without working?
Yeah. I mean, they worked, you know, up until they all were able to retire early.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I love hearing those stories, but it's.
Why aren't those stories ever our stories?
Well, that's the thing, Tom. If you do any research, even the people who win the lottery, it never goes well.
Did you hear some woman won the lottery for $500 million? And she's refusing to claim it because she wants to remain anonymous?
Oh, really?
You didn't hear that one?
No, but there was a movie about all these lottery winners that every one of their lives were basically ruined by winning the lottery.
I never understand that. That is the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Tom, family. That's the big...
Everybody gets $5 million, and then I never have to see you again.
No, this one lady was like, everyone asked her for money so much that... And people find out, like... From your family that you have money.
How hard is it to tell people no?
I don't know. I'm not good at it.
And then they say, wow, you're a scumbag. I can't believe you. And then you're like, all right, now our relationship's over. I don't need a relationship with you because I have $500 million that I'm curled up in bed with.
Well, how do you get even regular questions? How do you deal with that? When people say, hey, Tom...
Try.
I got an idea for a TV show. Give me your email. Tom, who's your agent? I think I need an agent. Give me your email.
What are you, on drugs?
You don't get those type of messages on Twitter or anything?
Yeah, and I'm telling you my response.
Oh, that's what you say to them? Are you on drugs?
I'm in the scene right now. I go, okay. What are you, on drugs?
No, I'm just really excited about working with you in show business.
I'm so busy. Sorry.
What? Tom, this could really work out great for both of us.
I know. Good luck.
So that's how you end it?
Yeah. A very nice, smiley no thank you.
Oh.
I just asked a friend of mine for something, and he said no. And he was just like, no thank you. And it was it.
Yeah, it's just because you want to be helpful, too. You know what I mean? Especially to people that are working on stuff. I always try to at least point them in the right direction, because that's what, you know, people are like, hey, hey, you're famous and rich, right, Paul? Can you do a show for free?
Yeah, no, you got to just tell them no straight off the bat. So if I had $500 million and somebody came up to me, and if the biggest problem is people are going to ask you stuff, I could deal with it.
No, no.
Right now, I'd be on Zappos just ordering five new pairs of running shoes, not even thinking about it. I'd be like, what do you want, a pizza or Chinese food? And you'd be like, I don't know. And before you get out your answer, I say, you know what? Both. It's already ordered. A New Hampshire woman bought a Powerball ticket worth $560 million last month is fighting to remain anonymous, saying in a lawsuit that releasing her name would constitute a significant invasion of her privacy. The woman filed suit against the New Hampshire Lottery Commission under the pseudonym Jane Doe. She says she made a huge mistake when she signed her real name on the back of the ticket before contacting a lawyer who told her that she could have remained anonymous. The lawsuit filed last week describes the woman as an engaged community member. She wishes to continue this work and the freedom to walk into a grocery store or attend public events without being known or targeted as the winner of $500 million to the state and community has given so much to her. The woman is represented by a law firm. Dun, dun. Don't sign the back of the ticket because if you sign it, you lost confidentiality. It becomes public, and I guess they want it to be public so they can advertise you around and say, somebody won.
You march into that grocery store, you do jumping jacks, you spin around, you wear a funny hat, you do whatever the people who gave you $500 million tell you to do.
Yeah, exactly. You sit there with balloons tied to your face, and then you buy the grocery store on the way out.
Yeah, exactly.
For twice what it's worth.
But did you see what's happening already? That's what I was going to explain to you. She's already spending $50,000 on lawyers. Do you notice that?
Yeah, but big deal.
No, but that's what happens. If you have $500 million, oh, Tom Papa's my neighbor. He's been making noise. I'm going to sue him.
So my lawyer gets to get a little action.
Right. But that's what happened. One of the ladies in that movie, she was a teacher.
Right.
And the lawyer's like, basically any kid in your class can sue you for anything. So she had to retire from teaching. And it, like, ruined her life.
I think we would be able to navigate these problems. Look, we're world-famous celebrities as it is. Is it that difficult? We could deal.
Tom, I just heard your thinking. You're a white trash millionaire. Your big thing was ordering pizza and Chinese food.
Yeah, that's how it's going to go. Look, we know people worth a lot of money. And yeah. They're not getting sued left and right. They do get sued. They get audited. Right. They have to deal with stuff that we don't have to deal with. But it's not that big of a hassle.
Well, somebody told this lady that it is.
Yeah, she has bad advice.
And the thing is, like,
I'd be able to deal.
She's making a big deal of it. Now she's famous for being the lady who doesn't want to be known. You know?
Yeah,
isn't
exactly.
Isn't that hilarious?
Yeah, just be Jane Doe.
If somebody saw you in the... How many people are going to see you in the supermarket in New Hampshire anyway, or wherever the hell... Where was it?
New Hampshire.
Yeah. There's 9,000 people in New Hampshire. Even if they all knew you, it wouldn't be a big deal. That's probably... I should move there, just because the odds of winning the lottery are pretty good, right? There's not that many people.
Yeah, it's kind of... We should move there just so we can win.
Were you ever in that life? Have you seen that at the...
What life?
The
millionaire life?
The scratch-off, I'm going to win the lotto life?
No, I've never been a part of it. I bought a ticket or two. I only go in big. I'm upset with myself that I didn't know there was a $560 million one. I would have... I like to play those big ones. I don't like to do the small ones. Remember last year I bought a couple.
So it is working. Because that's all it is they're advertising to try to make you buy it.
Yeah, right, exactly. So they get a... Of course. And anyone that says, like, well, the odds, you shouldn't buy it, you shouldn't spend $5 on it because the chances of winning, you have a better chance of being attacked by a snail in your sleep. Yeah, I get all that. I know that. I'm aware of that. But I'm also aware that someone's going to be the winner tomorrow.
Right.
One person will be the winner. That is a reality. So I don't understand all the naysaying and gobbledygook.
But I'm already to the next step because I'm already thinking, let's say, what would be a good amount? Let's say, how about... Tom Papa scratch off wins $25,000.
Hmm.
Does that make you want to never play the lottery again or play it all the time?
Neither.
What do you mean?
I'll still play it once every 5 years.
Because some people...
I'm not going to get addicted and be like, oh, now I got to... Now is... No. I'm not going to say, oh, I won enough and I'm never going to... No. I'm going to be the same. Whether I win $500 million, I'm going to be the same dude.
No, but...
Baking bread, hanging out with you, telling some jokes. That's it.
Yeah, but some people say... Like, I had a friend who picked the... What is the thing where you have to pick it in perfect order? It's like the trifecta or something
Pachinko.
Like that. Yeah, something like that. And he picked this super rare thing, and he actually won.
Yeah.
And now he's worse. Like, he's gambling 100 times more because he thinks, like, he figured it out. Sometimes it's worse for people.
I mean, look, there's... I do have the thing. Like, I don't understand being...
It's called juice, Tom.
Yeah. I've never had the juice. I've gambled, and I've lost a lot. Whenever I've gone into a casino, I lose so quickly that it's not even close to fun.
Yeah.
So... Maybe if I did win a bunch of money, I'd be like jacked up and want it. I've never experienced it, so I don't really know. When I do bet on football, and I did win last year, it made me excited for this year.
Right.
But then I lost, and then, you know, no big deal.
Well, sometimes it doesn't have to be about the money. Like, you just kind of enjoy this thing, and if it's $20 and you win $200, that's cool.
No, it's a rush. I mean, there have been... I've won hands at blackjack or in craps. Excuse me. And you definitely get... It's an adrenaline rush.
Yeah.
But not to the point where I would have to start gambling all
but
the
what's
time.
Your... Because that's the thing, is I'm so frugal, especially with gambling-wise. Like, I'll play like a 20.
Yeah, because you can see, you don't see it as just gambling money. You're like, oh, that was my rent.
But but people who do it know that you have to play long enough to hit a streak, and when you do get a double down or something, you've got to like
go in,
hit big. Yeah, that's how you win money.
My other problem with gambling is I'm not great at math.
Yeah, that hurts.
Whenever I'm sitting at the table and I'm playing 21, and I'm looking at the cards and not sure what it adds up to.
Yeah.
I know I'm better off probably going to get something to eat and watch a show.
Yeah. Well, if you've ever played like a game like craps is like that, or roulette, like if you ever made a bet that you could win like a phenomenal amount of money.
Yeah.
Like Norm MacDonald, one of his stories was he was playing craps and just kept like... Didn't even know what the bets were. Just right. The guy was just like, hey, you want to, what do they call it? Squeeze it or push it? Or
yeah.
When you just win it and they're like, you want to keep it going?
Uh-huh. Push
and,
it.
And he ended up winning like $100,000. And he couldn't believe it.
Wow.
And he couldn't believe people would just let him walk out of a casino with that much money.
Yeah.
But his point was like, it was great, but you can never go back to playing $5 hands after that.
Right.
When you win $100,000, it screws your reality up. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah, I'd imagine so. I guess my advice to our listeners is just stay a loser. And you won't be able to, if you don't win big, you're not going to have all these addictive problems. If you keep losing, you're never going to be hooked.
Yeah, just spend enough money to get the free drinks. That's all you need to do. Yeah, we got to. When are we going to go back to Vegas, man? We haven't been there in a while.
I know. We got to talk to the agent. We're booked all the way through December. I didn't see one Vegas play.
Where we go? Yeah, that's like a place. It's funny when you go there too much, you definitely notice it, and then when you haven't been there, you notice it too.
Yeah, that's really true. I think I have a corporate gig there, so maybe it'll give me the Jones.
That
we need a big show at the Caesar's Palace.
Yeah.
I think that's where my corporate gig is.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, it's fun to go in and just do... we should be in a room somewhere. We got to get bigger, Paul. We got to bring the podcast to Vegas.
To Vegas, yeah. The topless pool. Yeah.
Maybe that's what we should talk about in the subscriber podcast. You know, we have our Patreon listeners who get the bonus podcast. Maybe we should go through our Vegas fantasy in the extra podcast. Hey, did you see that? You know, we talked about your dog experience on the plane with the explosive.
Oh,
diarrhea.
Right, yeah.
Did you see they're finally making rules now about animals on planes?
Oh, really? What was it?
Somebody last week tried to bring a peacock on the Delta flight. You saw that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not really a emotional support animal. The peacock is a giant bird with claws and big feathers. So they, this is the, I read a great article, I think it was David Brooks was writing about it, that this is what happens when you do something nice for people and then other people start to take advantage of it.
Yes.
That you can go on Amazon and just buy a emergency animal vest for right. your dog, and then people are just scamming it. They're like, I want to bring my dog on. The same thing as like buying weed here in in LA before it was legal. You could just call a doctor on the internet, get contact one on the internet. He would give you a bogus evaluation.
Right.
Same thing with the pets. They you fill out a thing online. They say, do you need this animal to... Are you stressed? You say yes. They send you a vest for $50, and all these people are bringing their pets on. And I was like, you know, there hasn't been that many problems. I didn't see that many problems with them. And you had the explosive diarrhea story when the dog made a mess of the thing. Well, apparently, there's a lot of incidents. There are dogs that aren't trained who are attacking the service dogs.
Yeah.
There are people who have been... attacked by the dogs themselves.
Right.
There's been a lot of people with allergy problems. There's been a lot of stuff. So finally, the airlines, because everybody is such a monster and exploits the system, they actually are going to now be a little more strict with it.
Well, my old thing was the size. Like, wasn't it, didn't it used to be like you have to be under... what, 20 pounds or something?
Yeah.
And then just during Christmas, everyone just tried to, like, bring their dog home.
Yeah, they're gigantic
and, animals. You know, I noticed in, I was at the mall yesterday.
Uh-huh.
There's freaking dogs just walking around Macy's.
Yeah.
Like, they're doing it there, too.
I know. We saw one peeing on the rug at Nordstrom's.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So did they change the rule there?
Like no, they're still, they've got to figure out a way to do it because people have gotten so mean about it.
Yeah.
And saying that you have to let my animal in. So then they've got to make real rules now.
Yeah. It's like I'm going to buy that bed after the dog's been scratching its ass on there.
Look, I love my Bella. She's a great dog. She's pretty well trained. She, would be a disaster.
What'd you say?
She's pretty well trained.
Pretty well trained.
She is. You don't think she is?
No, I think she is. She could be. She's a leaper.
Well, she. Well, that you are. You bringing up the Super Bowl party?
I think. Well, a little bit. Yeah.
You know, when she's at the Super Bowl party with another, she's with another crazy dog, and they're running around.
Mm-hmm.
That was a party.
Yeah.
She's not gonna. It's gonna. It. That's an extreme situation to get her to just calm down.
So when she stands on her hind legs and starts eating off a plate, that's normal.
All right, we did have a couple incidents. Yeah, she went up on the counter like a person and ate a whole plate of salami. That was out of control. Yeah.
Did she realize that she can do that like, here yet or no?
No. But, you know, it was because she knew no one was watching. She was...
You think?
Oh, 100%.
I think here, like, you know, because she sniffs like she's still a puppy.
Yeah.
Like that she can't actually just hop up and get it.
Uh-huh. She could. Like the bread is always...
I think she doesn't know. I've seen her like just kind of like reach her nose and
but why?
I think she thinks it's maybe higher than it is. I don't know.
Well, in this vegetarian household, it's very rare. It would have to be a party for there just to be meat out on the counter.
Right. You haven't had anything good on the counter yet. That's why.
Yeah. That's the bacon bread. She hasn't sniffed it. Yeah.
Yeah,
but I mean, like, if there's like a delivery at night, like a food delivery, and she's in the hallway, I'll tell her to sit and stay, and I can open the door, do the money, get the food, close the door, and then tell her that it's okay to move.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, she's trained in that regard, and she is like she has some stuff down.
Oh yeah, I'm not saying it's funny that you know. It's, you know, what do you expect a dog to do when there's like
right No, exactly.
Food but, everywhere.
Right. And that's the point. I know enough. As I'll say, the dog is pretty well trained, but I know well enough. I know the limits.
Yeah.
Bringing her to LAX, walking through security, past all the food courts, getting onto a plane, that's a level of, like, you need professional training. There's a reason why those dogs have gone to school and got those vests. They are well-trained animals.
Right.
For those situations. You can't just bring your dog in who you think is cute because it jumps on the bed at night and be like, yeah, you're flying with me. That's ridiculous.
But here's the thing. Best case scenario, Bella is on the plane, seatbelt on, sitting on in the chair. Everything's perfect, well-behaved, doesn't bark. As soon as the guy next to you starts to eat, she's just going to eat everything that's on the guy's tray.
Yes, of course. He's going to open up his little thing of salami, and she's going to eat it. No, finally, they're going to have to... they said that it's like over... Like 250,000 animals.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, just last year.
Well, I mean, that flight that I took, the flight was delayed for hours because they had to clean up the plane.
Ugh. Yeah, so finally, the peacock broke the camel's back. Did you see who died today?
No. Because they're dead.
John Mahoney.
The guy from Frasier?
Yeah. He was a good one.
Yeah, he had a couple. What else is he in?
He's only 77.
He was
in the one with, what's his name? Those movies with, the good-looking guy.
He played somebody's dad.
Yeah.
In like an 80s movie.
Yeah, that independent film.
He's from England?
He's from England. Not anymore, he isn't.
Yeah, he's got that Frasier money. Speaking of lottery.
My friend was in the movie that he was in.
He was in the Manhattan Project.
Yeah, but that's not the one we're
Moonstruck,
thinking.
Eight Men Out. Say Anything is the one I'm thinking
no,
of.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
No, keep going.
No, he's the dad in Say Anything. Remember John Cusack says, I don't want to, what do you want to do with your life?
Right.
And he's like, I don't want to sell anything, make anything, export anything. He has that whole speech.
Right. He was a great actor, but keep going. It's not the one I'm thinking of.
In the Line of Fire?
No.
Reality Bites?
No.
He was in a bunch of...
keep going.
She's the One?
Yeah.
I just watched that on the plane. Well, everything else is way
with
way
what's
newer.
His name? The guy who wrote it and directed it and starred in it.
Yeah, that's She's the One.
She's the One. That's the one. No, but wasn't there...
The Brothers, right?
Yeah, that's, the Brothers.
Yeah, I don't know why that's not listed on here.
The Brothers something.
Yeah, I just... McMullen.
Brothers but, McMullen.
With Ed Burns.
Yes, that's the one I'm thinking
not
of.
On here?
Ed Burns...
He was in Tin Man, too. That was the one we
wrote
about.
It, directed it, the whole thing. He was the dad. My friend Jen Johnston was in it.
He was also in a bunch of...
he had a great voice.
Bunch of Coen Brothers movies. He's in Barton Fink, Hudsucker Proxy. I don't know if he was in anything else.
Really,
Iron Giant.
Really good actor. Well, he died. 77. Not that... old, if you
pretty old,
77. I feel like everybody gets to their 80s now.
Yeah, unless you're on fentanyl, unless you're a singer, a famous singer. That seems to be the big one. How old was Prince? He didn't make it. He was 50s.
Well, that's. Yeah, Prince, that's different. That was on, the crazy drug.
Yeah, I was just trying
you
to...
You told me that Tom Petty died in the same thing, right?
Yeah, that's what he was 67, maybe? I was just thinking about if Prince was even in his 50s. He had to be, right? He's been around for a long time.
He was born in 1958.
58. So, yeah. So he was 60 this year?
Yeah.
Wow. I would never have thought. That's like Jimi Hendrix being 60. That's weird to even think about Prince being 60.
Yeah.
And still dressing like that.
Still looking cool. Are you going to have a different look when you're an old man? Are you going to keep rocking the same look? Or are you going to shift into an old distinguished gentleman? Or maybe you'll start dressing like Prince in your later years?
I'd like to. I think it's harder to... You see the guys that... I mean, you were talking about it. The guys that do wear the suit and have a look.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a guy I just saw the other day, and he had the three-piece suit and the pocket watch with a chain on it, and it just seemed like so much work.
Yeah, that is a lot of work.
He looked like he was in a play.
Yeah. I know. That is a whole... When you start dressing up like the bartender with the handlebar mustache... And
yeah. It's really...
The leather things on your sleeves and stuff, it's like, oh boy.
Yeah, it's almost as like, you know, when you'd see Flavor Flav with the clock, like it's almost as much work. As much work.
Yeah.
As, it's like, you know, he doesn't want
to
wear the clock.
To be a costume.
Yeah.
You know? That like goes over into the other side of like just being a stupid costume.
And that's what it's got to feel like, right? To some degree.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, I think definitely stage-wise, we've got to take some chances. I think that's the only way. I mean, you see it with stand-up now, especially with people watching these YouTube clips. Mm-hmm. As soon as you walk out, you've got to have some kind of thing. You know what I mean?
You got to look like something?
I guess.
I don't know.
Everyone's got some crazy beard or long hair or wear a orange jacket or something.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, you know.
Look at Pharrell. Everyone knows him because of his dumb hat.
Why don't we get those hats?
Yeah, that's the thing is everyone's going to think, what about the Mushmouth hat? Remember that?
My one special I did, I was dressed kind of crazy. It made no difference.
Yeah, but you still, Rob Zombie's directing you. You're still not even in, you're not even opening the door at Rob Zombie's costume place. You know what I mean? Like,
what do you mean?
He's always Rob Zombie. He's always,
yeah.
He's 10 times what you're wearing, even when you feel like, oh, wow, this is crazy.
I'm really gone crazy. Yeah, it's true.
He pulls out the cowboy hat with a skull on it.
Did you see that Tesla had a big launch today?
No.
I think it's the most powerful rocket ever.
Oh, they're doing the rocket thing? I saw that the mayor of L.A. met with him about the tunnel.
Oh, really? What's up with the tunnel? Are we getting tunnels in L.A.
Well, that's what I thought. There's a picture of it. Didn't you see it?
I've seen progress on it.
I follow the mayor's Eric Garcetti.
Yeah, he's a good mayor.
And
he's going to run for governor.
He has a picture of brainstorming. There's the picture of the tunnel.
Oh, yeah.
Because we're going to have a tunnel that goes to our airport, right? Isn't that
you drive your car into a tunnel, and then it shoots your car to the airport in like 10 seconds.
And so, yeah, the company's called The Boring Company.
Yeah. It's funny. SpaceX made history Tuesday afternoon when it successfully launched its new Falcon Heavy rocket, carrying an electric car bound for deep space. And returned two of the three 15-story boosters back to Earth for perfect vertical landings. The initial test launch of what is now the world's most powerful operational rocket marks the latest milestone in billionaire Elon Musk's quest to send humans to Mars and eventually colonize the Red Planet. Yeah, so it was a successful launch. this gigantic thing. The other rockets come down and they come back down and land so they can be used again. And a Tesla is now floating in space. An electric car, a red convertible roadster, slated to be deployed 6 hours after liftoff. If all goes well, it and a dummy driver named Starman will be sent into orbit around the sun. They will reach a speed of 7 miles per second and travel approximately 250 miles from Earth, eventually passing close by the red planet. So there's a Tesla floating in space.
It's crazy.
That guy could do anything.
But that's the thing, is there's not even like a group of guys like him. It's just him.
Yeah.
Like, he hires the guys that are also...
Well, because guys like you are just playing scratch-off lottery games hoping you can win the lottery.
No, I'm making people laugh, Tom. No, but seriously, if, you know, like, they had all those filmmakers in the 70s, like Scorsese and all those guys were friends, and they're all making movies together.
Yeah.
And Tesla doesn't have anybody else. He's
no,
like,
it's just him.
It's just him. So that's why it's so amazing to me that, like, he's the only guy that even thought of this stuff.
Right.
Everybody else is like, why should we go? I'm just going to make
money here. I think everybody thinks about great things like that, but only a few people actually think, like, it's possible. If the stock market didn't crash, maybe I could do some inventions.
Well, that's what I mean. Everyone's worried about, like, making their money here instead of...
Yeah.
I already made my money. Now I'm trying to make this place better. Or if we can't fix this place, why don't we start another planet? Nobody thinks like that. Maybe no. Tim Burton or something. I don't know.
I'll tell you what I learned yesterday. My friend Flanny from Largo wanted me to go golfing with him. So he's been asking for a long time. There was a period when I did golf, when I was doing like these celebrity golf tournament things, and I learned how to play, and I haven't played in years because I'm busy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm writing. It's really what I was trying to figure out. Why haven't I been golfing in all this time? It's because all my mornings are spent writing.
Yeah.
And he's like, come on, don't be such a square. Let's go golf. It's going to be great. So I went out golfing with him yesterday. 9:30 in the morning, so I got to leave at 8:30. I get there. It's me, Bo Burnham, my friend Joey Ryan, and Flanny.
Mm-hmm.
And all great guys. Love these guys. Everyone's funny. Everyone's fun to be with. Tee off at 9:30. I left the golf course at 2 o'clock.
Yeah, crazy.
2 o'clock. I'm home at 2:30. I'm pretty exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
I shower off. I sit down and check some email messages, pass out on my couch for an hour. It's now 4:30. Day wasted. Yes, it was beautiful. Yes, it was fun. Yes, we had some laughs. Yes, I played horribly. I cannot believe the president golfs like 3 times a week.
Yeah, the amount of time it takes.
I'm just writing jokes.
Yeah.
I'm writing a script about a family. I'm writing a silly book about family life. I don't have time to golf. How is the president of the United States putting on his white ice cream uniform... tucking his shirt into his belt and going out there and golfing several times a week?
Yeah.
How?
It's always a waste of time.
You're the leader of the free world. That's a big job. You know who's not golfing? Elon Musk.
Yep.
Elon Musk isn't going into the shop and buying some sunscreen and maybe pick up some balls, practice putting. Putting is the perfect word for this endeavor.
Yeah.
Just putting around.
I mean, there's a certain person who does, and I think I come from that family, that they really love the game and they love everything about it. And, you know, you even see like Eddie Vedder, I guess, really loves the golf.
Yep.
And who else? There's
Bill Murray.
Willie Nelson, too.
Willie Nelson.
They have a thing where it's like the love of this game and the history and the beautiful landscape and all that kind of stuff, and they really appreciate it.
Yes.
And I'm not one of those people, at least not yet.
I have gone to some beautiful... When I was golf, I went to some beautiful... I went to Clint Eastwood's Country Club up in Northern California. I went to Sun Valley. I went to the Riviera Country Club here in... And you stand out there in this beautiful day with some friends and family, and... It is gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
It is a beautiful experience. And you're right. There is this something to the sport of it. Bo and Joey and Flanny are a better golfer by me by 10 times.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I haven't played in years, so I was very, very rusty. Even at my best, these guys would kick ass. And so when you're that good at something, it's actually even more competitive. It's more fun. They're dialed into the game of it. The problem is if you have anything else to do.
Yeah.
I was thinking about Bill Murray. Love Bill Murray. He's hilarious. You know what he's not doing? He's not writing.
Yeah.
He's not writing those scripts. He's trying to avoid scripts and then eventually getting a script and then having to go act in it. That's what Bill Murray's doing. Bill Murray isn't sitting here trying to figure out how to write a new bunch of jokes to go try at the Comedy Store tonight.
Yeah, he's avoiding work.
Yes. He's out there golfing. Of course, if I was an actor and people just loved to watch me act and I didn't have to write anything, I would golf my ass off.
Yeah.
That being said, it was nice being out there with my pals. To do it once every couple months might not be bad.
I certainly think that, and I forget when this was. There was a time where I was doing comedy, and I'd moved back home for a couple months, and my friends had a Monday night 9-hole golf league.
Nice.
And that
nine
was,
holes is sweet.
That was the perfect amount of time.
That is sweet. At nine, if I'd gotten in the car and left, would have had some laughs with my buddies, and would have been back home at the keyboard. Writing away.
Yeah, it was
nice.
Monday nights from like 5 to 6:45 or something like that.
Perfect.
It was perfect.
The 9 holes, that's the key. Everybody's getting their sandwich and french fries and going out for another 2 hours to finish this up.
Yeah.
The whole time I just kept thinking, how many more holes? You see that sweet 18 that you get so excited.
Especially if you're not... Like, there's certain things, like, if you're playing well, because it is, I think you have to be in a certain amount of shape for it. Even your hands have to be, like, kind of in shape. It's like playing a guitar.
Yeah.
If you don't have the calluses and stuff by the 10th hole, you can't even swing right because your thumb is killing you.
Yeah, the whole thing. God.
And everyone hurts their back playing golf, and it's, like, the least...
I know.
The least strenuous
then
thing you
I
can do.
I did something else. Then today, I went for the second week in a row back to yoga, back to my favorite teacher. That is time well spent.
Yeah. So you feel like that's a better...
You get a workout. You're de-stressed. Your head is in the right place. Your body's in the right place. It's a benefit. So then when you go to work... It's, you know what? I just enjoy working, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess I enjoy that more than most other things.
Well, you have to, if it makes it feel like you've used your time well. I mean, ever since A-Rod got me back into yoga, I've really been focusing on...
Have you gone back since you saw A-Rod?
Yeah, I did.
Was he there again?
No. He was... he was at the Super Bowl because she performed there. That's what he was doing in Universal. He was like, she was rehearsing for the Super Bowl, and he came over to yoga. J-Lo, that's his girlfriend.
She was at the Super Bowl?
She did something like the night before, maybe like one of those pre-things or something.
Pink did a good job.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about the Super Bowl yet.
And all our friends in Philly, we had some good fried chicken.
Yeah.
That chicken was really good.
Good fried chicken.
A lot of cheese.
What else?
I had a martini. The dry January was put to rest.
Oh, yeah. So what do you feel? Were you conflicted at the end of a...
I tell you what I feel.
Now that Weed February has started?
Now that it's all Weed February. Yeah, it kind of made me feel like not like drinking as much.
Fentanyl February, I think it should be. Yeah. No, but you feel like you don't want to go back to...
I think what I've learned is I felt so much better not drinking that I'm not that anxious to drink as often.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It slows you down a little?
Yeah, I think that's kind of the... the lesson learned from dry February.
Yeah.
Now, this may change as the month goes on, but I think I just felt like there was better feeling. I felt better when I wasn't doing it.
Yeah. And the crazy thing is, like, people in New York, like we were talking about, like, it's already this terrible weather, and you've got to go outside and temperature change, and people are smoking and drinking like fishes. Like, have you ever been?
Because why? Because their lives are miserable?
I don't know. That's what I think about. Is like, you know, when people start talking about California, it's like, yeah, everyone looks 10 years younger than everyone else in New York.
Yeah.
And there's a reason for it. Don't you think?
Yeah, it's true.
I used to think, like, oh, these people got money or they're doing something that we're not. Yeah, they're not drinking. They're eating well. They're in the sun. They're exercising every day.
Yeah, no, there's definitely something to it. And, you know, we went out for Italian food and I had 2 glasses of Barolo and it felt good. It was nice wine. I kind of feel like the same way with eating meat. It's like, you don't do it all the time, so when you do it, it should be really good.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to just down some wine that's, like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the Super Bowl, like, the wine was all right.
Yeah.
I want it to be like, wow, this is worth feeling crummy tomorrow.
Yeah, like a cigar. Like, you...
Right.
If you have a cigar...
I'm just
going to
start smoking $2 cigars so I could have 12 of them during the day. I want a nice $50 cigar that I have once every 2 months.
That's what I was going to tell you about. My Instagram is just people filming themselves at the gym. Uh-huh. There's like 20 people filming themselves working out.
Yeah.
And then the 25th one is Robert Kelly lighting up a cigar.
I know. Why doesn't Robert realize he looks like an idiot?
It's like he's the only one not even pretending to be healthy.
There's a big cigar in his mouth, like a big pacifier. He's got to stop.
And it's like, and that's what it lends itself to, like, all right, it's just like when I was telling you about the Facebook thing, like everyone's like, time for another drink. And it's like, if you post that 3 times a day for a week, you're just like timelining your alcoholism. That's all you're doing.
I went through a period where I was posting a lot of my martinis.
Yeah.
And, it does become a little bit of a thing. I'll tell you this, though. My daughter had said I was in a better mood during the month when I wasn't drinking.
Mm-hmm.
When we went to the Super Bowl party, and I was 2 sips in on the martini, which I hadn't had since mid-December.
Mm-hmm.
There is no way I was happier at any moment in January as I was 2 sips in of that martini. That thing,
I didn't realize that was the first day.
That does the job.
Yeah.
Martini works. It works. It's like you want to feel good. But the problem is, and I know I'm like a broken record, 1 martini, that's it. Game over.
Yeah.
Move on with your life. That is the perfect amount of joy you should allow yourself. You go into 2. When you get up from the couch, you got to steady yourself a little bit, and you're a little lightheaded.
You're chasing the dragon, man.
You're chasing the dragon, man.
Law of diminishing returns.
All right. It's time. You know, a lot of people say that as comedians, we should be funny, and they should we should have a joke ready for them at all time. And we don't normally have these jokes because they're usually terrible. That being said, this is a segment in the podcast where we like to tell you some jokes, street jokes that we find on the internet. What subject would you like?
What are my choices?
Racist, redneck, dirty, white people, stupid.
These all seem racist.
Women, they all seem like a horrible thing for a white man to be doing. So I'm going to go after white people. Okay, the Winter Olympics. Letting white people win at sports no one else can afford to learn.
What?
You heard it. What do you call a bunch of white people in an elevator?
I don't know.
A box of crackers.
See, I like the ones that are so thought out and intelligent, but aren't funny at all.
like
you can tell a smart person thought this was going to be the funniest thing ever. What does Charles Dickens keep in his spice rack?
I don't know.
The best of times and the worst of times.
Of course.
You get it? It's a spice and a book by Charles Dickens.
I got it. Here is a mashup. It's a redneck joke, but it's also a Yo Mama joke.
Okay.
You never, very rare, this is a very rare moment. You very rarely get a Yo Mama mixed with redneck. Yo Mama is so redneck, the doormat to her trailer home doubles as a mud flap for her pickup truck.
Well, that just seems practical. Okay, here's one.
Whew, that one hurt.
What did the traffic light say to the other traffic light?
What?
Don't look, I'm changing.
Oh. This is back to a Jeff Foxworthy version of the redneck joke.
Okay.
You might be a redneck if the Halloween pumpkin on your front... I'm going to do it as him. You might be a redneck if the Halloween pumpkin on your front porch has more teeth than your wife. On this joke site, there are two ads on either side for RussiaMatches.com. And there's a voluptuous woman in a red dress leering at me, and it says, "Want curvy single ladies?"
Who doesn't?
And you press the button that says date now.
You're waiting for a punchline.
Woo! Those are some bad jokes. Last week we only did the jokes for the subscribers and we felt like it was too painful.
Well, it's only good because we didn't write them, so we're not judging it.
All right, I'm going to give you one last redneck.
Okay.
And then I'm out.
All right.
What do a gang member and a redneck have in common?
I don't know.
They both know how to throw a good hoedown. Now, to the driver who picks me up in Vallejo, California. In a couple weeks. And you ask me for a joke. If I were to say that joke to you, would you be pleased? I think not.
Yeah, it was like the... Remember the driver that we had that loved Jeff Dunham? Mm-hmm. Or wasn't that... or no, what was it? It was some like old like ventriloquist comic or something.
Yeah.
And he was just like, oh, man, I love that guy.
Yeah, that's always a great compliment to a comedian. You're a comedian? Wow. Never heard of you. You know who I like.
You know who's funny? Not yeah. You.
You know who made something out of his career. Well, this is a... Now we are entering a strange part of the year where the only big holiday is... well, we're in Black History Month, but we also have Valentine's Day coming up in a couple mm-hmm. weeks for all the lovers out there.
Yeah.
And it's an annoying holiday for everybody.
Yes.
It's one of those, like, everyone's annoyed by it, but we're all stuck in it. And if you're out here, it feels like baseball season's coming. But if you're back east, it still feels... This is the hardest part of winter. February, March. They're rough. They're rough. I'll be heading out there. I'm coming to Boston and heading to New York in a couple weeks. So it's not like we're just going to be dilly-dallying in the springtime. I'm coming out there for some hardcore cold, that bleak part. I'll be trying to bring you some joy.
Yeah. In 7 days, spring training starts.
Amazing.
Baseball.
Amazing.
Football season just ended.
Whew. Thank God. all right. So go to yoga class. Try not to eat so much. I've cut back on my drinking. Let's see how long that holds. I guess if I could start smoking weed, I don't know. Why am I so obsessed with... Why can't I just eat some Pringles and go about my life?
Yeah, you should.
Well, I'll try.
Pringles are so good.
I'll do my best. All right, if you're a subscriber, hold on. We're going to get you the bonus podcast.
If you're not a subscriber, go to patreon.com/comethepapa and get your extra episodes and bread and all that stuff.
Enjoy your life.